for WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Emotional testimony and a hint of the defense's argument in the murder trial of James Alex Fields Jr. We have a report from the first day of arguments. Lawmakers propose a tax on carbon dioxide even as Virginia's air quality is improving. And it's been serving the valley for decades, but skyline literacy's future is now in question. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, November 30th.
Support for the WMRA Daily comes from the shops at Stonefield at Route 29 and Hydraulic Road in Charlottesville, featuring a collection of shopping, dining, and entertainment experiences with parking available. Learn more at shopsatstonefield.com.
A young man hit by a car after the 2017 white supremacist rally in Charlottesville gave dramatic testimony on Thursday. In an opening arguments, the defense hinted at its strategy. Virginia Public Radio's Sandy Hausman was in court and filed this report from the murder trial of James Alex Fields, Jr.
If you saw the award-winning photo of the crash that claimed Heather Heyer's life, you've seen Marcus Martin, a young black man caught in midair after he was hit by a Dodge Charger. On the stand, he trembled and wept as he recalled the moment when his colleague from work, Heather Heyer, was killed when he and about 30 others were injured. There is no doubt that James Fields, then 20 years old, was behind the wheel. Both the prosecutor and the defense agree. But Fields' attorney hopes to show that he was trying to escape a hostile crowd. A second witness has cast doubt on that narrative. Michael Webster said Fields' car sat idling and no one was nearby. As the crowd came into view, he told the jury, Fields backed up slowly, then raced forward. Nina Antony told the jury Fields had driven more than 500 miles through the night from Maumee, Ohio, to join the Unite the Right rally. James Fields was here with anger, she argued. This case is about his decision to act on that anger. Fields, wearing a light blue Oxford shirt and a dark blue pullover, showed little emotion in court, even when prosecutors mentioned a text exchange he had with his mother. Before he reached Charlottesville, she wrote, "Be careful." He replied, "We're not the ones who need to be careful." In Charlottesville, I'm Sandy Hausman.
The Dave Matthews Band will donate $5 million for affordable housing in Charlottesville. The Daily Progress reports that the money will go toward the renovation or replacement of all of the city's public housing and the construction of additional affordable housing on underutilized land. The first phase of the project will include a complete renovation of Crescent Halls, which houses elderly and disabled low-income residents, and construction of brand new units on South First Street. Some of the donation will come from the ticket sales for the band's shows at the John Paul Jones Arena in mid-December. Meanwhile, landlord groups and tenant advocates in Virginia have endorsed proposals that would alter the state's landlord-tenant law. The Virginian Pilot reports that a work group of the Virginia Housing Commission endorsed the proposals on Wednesday. Some cities in Virginia have some of the highest rates of orders for eviction. If passed, the changes are expected to lead to fairer treatment for people facing eviction, as well as property owners who are waiting for rent to be paid. The changes include giving tenants who are behind on rent more time to come up with the money. Other efforts would reduce paperwork and the legal bills that landlords pay and that tenants are supposed to reimburse. The proposals must be approved by the full Housing Commission before going to the General Assembly. A bipartisan group of lawmakers has introduced a landmark bill in Congress that would charge fossil fuel companies a tax for their carbon dioxide emissions. From partner station WCVE, Charles Fishburne reports.
It comes in the wake of last week's U.S. government report on climate change.
It shows us that we've got a grave problem.
Chris Wiegard is a state coordinator for Citizens Climate Lobby that supports the bill to charge $15 for each ton of carbon emitted into the air, increasing $10 each year afterwards. He says even though it would cost consumers, it would balance out.
Over time, that would create 2 million jobs over 10 years, reduce carbon dioxide emissions 33%.
The legislation is not given much hope this session, but with the democratically controlled House next year, it could get a hearing.
It demands for us to be civil and nonpartisan and to think of our grandchildren.
Charles Fishburne, WMRA News.
Meanwhile, a new report shows that Virginia's air quality is improving. The Virginia Department of Environmental Quality said on Wednesday that ground-level ozone, nitrogen dioxide, and sulfur dioxide levels have dropped significantly compared to past years. The state had only 6 code orange days of excessive ozone in 2018 and 4 in 2017. In 1998, 20 years ago, the state reported more than 100 such days. Ground-level ozone, the main ingredient in smog, can cause serious breathing problems for some people. A proposed amendment to Virginia's Constitution would change redistricting. An independent commission, rather than the General Assembly, would redraw Virginia's state legislative districts after the 2020 census under the amendment proposed by a nonpartisan group. One Virginia 2021 is opposed to what it considers the gerrymandering that occurs when Virginia's lawmakers take the lead in drawing their own legislative districts. On Thursday, the group unveiled a proposal to amend Virginia's Constitution so an independent commission would draw the districts rather than the legislature. Advocates say the amendment must pass the legislature in 2019 and 2020 legislative sessions, and that a statewide referendum be in place in time for the required redistricting in 2021. Virginia's legislative districts have drawn judicial scrutiny for packing excessive numbers of African-American voters into a small number of districts, diluting their influence in surrounding districts. Finally today, for decades, Skyline Literacy has offered English and citizenship classes to the Shenandoah Valley's large immigrant and refugee communities. But after losing out on a large federal grant earlier this year, the organization's future is in question. WMRA's Andrew Jenner reports.
أنا أحب العيش في مدينة هارسنبرغ لأنها مدينة.
Speaking in Arabic, her native language, Gaida Sabti describes her warm feelings for Harrisonburg, where she's lived for more than 5 years. Here's her translation.
I like to live in Harrisonburg, me and my husband and my children and my friend, because the Harrisonburg safety for every culture, black, white, any people. Any refugee can live in here.
Sabti and her husband came to the United States as refugees from Iraq with 5 kids. They've since added a 6th child, and in early November, Sabti took the oath to become an American citizen.
I'm very happy because I feel safety now.
To prepare, Sabti took English and citizenship classes through Skyline Literacy, a Harrisonburg nonprofit that has served the area's large immigrant and refugee communities for more than 30 years. But in September, Skyline got some really bad news. It didn't receive a large federal grant that's made up a huge chunk of its budget in recent years. Barbie Spitz is the organization's literacy program coordinator.
I mean, it was like a sinking feeling, you know. I was really expecting to get that grant. So it was a huge blow, and it honestly took a few days for me to realize how this was going to change the entire future of Skyline Literacy.
In 2010, 2012, and 2015, Skyline received significant funding through a U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services grant. The last grant, jointly awarded to Skyline Literacy and the local Church World Service office, ran through September 2017 and allowed Skyline to offer citizenship classes to nearly 300 people in the area. The large majority of those who applied for naturalization after taking these classes passed their citizenship test and interview. After a year's break from the program, Spitz says, they expected to receive around $150,000 they'd requested for another 2-year period beginning this October.
We have done really good grant applications before, and we've provided really good citizenship programming before, so we didn't see any reason why we wouldn't receive the grant.
But that didn't happen. While the total grant program remained about the same size, $9.4 million doled out to similar organizations all over the country, Skyline Literacy simply wasn't among the recipients. Board members and staff say they've been told to learn more about why Skyline didn't get this funding, but so far haven't heard anything. In the meantime, they've already been making adjustments.
And at that point, we cut staff and limited our arrangement here in terms of space to squeeze into some smaller digs.
Bill Fisher is president of the Skyline Literacy Board.
We had a staff of 5, 3 full-time and 2 part-time, and we're down to 2 full-time now. So we've cut costs where we can, but, you know, now we're looking at the income side.
While Skyline still receives other government and foundation funding, Fisher says the organization needs around $100,000 in private donations to fund programming through next summer.
We've reached out to the community, and some donations have come in. We expect that to continue through the end of the year. And at that point, we'll have to take an accounting of where we are and determine whether we can continue to go forward.
He's hopeful that that approach will help Skyline make it through this rough financial patch, allowing it to continue assisting people like Gaida Sabti settle into their new homes in the valley.
I am very happy because Skyline helped me. Skyland helped my husband. This is a very good school, I think. The Skyland Literacy sent the tutor to my home. I think this is very, very good.
Here's Spitz again.
I think we could all agree that every adult has a right to an education and a right to the opportunity to be a fully integrated and active member of their community. And I think that if we realize that this is a service that we want for our community, we want our immigrant and refugee families to have access to English and civics education, then folks will step up and do their part.
For WMRA News, I'm Andrew Jenner.
You can learn more about that story at WMRA.org. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicki. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your Friday.